recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Final hour. Darren Donick and Chase on this gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Vols heading down to the Swamp to take on the Gators. To learn a little bit more about this Florida team, let's bring in the man who's been covering them for a long time and the man who was sitting next to me in the Georgia Dome, guys, when the tornado hit at the SEC basketball tournament. Yeah, he was sitting right next to me. I don't know if he knows that or not, but he was.
I can tell you, I was a millisecond away from going underneath that table there. I was about to duck for cover when stuff started hitting around us.
Yeah, at that point, I had already left. I was already headed for cover underneath. I had already picked up. I said, I don't like, because I saw one of those beams going back and forth. And I said, you know what? I don't think this looks safe. That does not look right. And I got out of there.
It's a night that you feel like it's a miracle that you were able to not only live through it, but all the people that lived through it. It's still a fascinating story and what happened. And then the way they were able to play that tournament at Georgia Tech was crazy, crazy.
No doubt. Something we will never forget, Pat, for sure. So did Saturday's game against Alabama surprise you in a good way, or did you think Florida could actually hang in there and give Alabama all they can handle?
I didn't think they would do it that way. I didn't think they would be as successful running the ball and as successful stopping the run. I didn't think they would be able to control the lines of scrimmage the way they were able to. I thought there was a chance they could hit some bigger plays, and obviously not having Richardson kind of changed that dynamic a little bit. But so anyway, they, you know, you watch them play and they go, okay, if they can keep it together and keep understanding the importance of every game, they still have a chance to be what they want to. They need to go into that Georgia game when it's gone, you know, to go to Atlanta. That's all they want to be.
How were they able – because I admitted on the show, I punted after the first quarter. I'm like, yep, here we go, typical Alabama game. They're just going to go there and rip Florida apart. It's 21-3. There's nothing to see here. Moving on to some more games. Luckily, there's, you know, things like Twitter and other things to – or you just go back and you check and you realize, oh, it's a game again. So I watched most of the second half, but I just thought it was going to be typical Alabama stuff. How was Florida able to gather themselves after a bad first quarter and a bad start? And you could make the case, I don't know if you agree or disagree, that Florida probably outplayed Alabama the rest of the way.
Yeah, but you got to play for 60. So, I mean, they didn't outplay them in the first quarter, and that's where they lost the game. But they played at a high level, and basically they took away the run, and they could – if they could just get a pass break up here and there, they started playing a little bit more press coverage, and they were also quit whiffing on tackles. They were whiffing on tackles in that first quarter really badly. I just think they weren't used to the speed maybe of Alabama's guys making moves, or maybe they just were trying so hard they were running by guys. And then they started doing that, and offensively they never had any trouble after that. I guess it was the first series. Moving the ball. I mean, just they were smart enough not to try to take big chunks. Just take a little bit at a time, keep getting first downs, go down, score touchdowns. So, I mean, it's a plan. You got to be a pretty good football team to do it, and you can try it too. But Florida ended up, as we all know, coming out of it with an L. So in the end, it wasn't good enough to beat Alabama.
How would you assess their quarterback play to this point, and what is it going to look like moving forward?
Well, that's the question I think that nobody knows for sure, and a lot will depend on the health of both those guys. But, look, Richardson is a dynamic guy who has a lot to learn and needs to know the playbook, and before they're going to throw him in there and go, you're the starter, here are your six plays, they're not going to do that. So they're working with him on that, trying to get him better at that. And, of course, you know, Emory knows the playbook and knows what he's doing, but has, you know, I think physically has the talent. He's just got that – he doesn't have that twitch factor mentally where he's just not – don't wait until the guy's wide open to throw it. You've got to throw it when you know he's going to come open. And that's something – Felipe Franks said the same exact thing. You know, they've got a chance, though, with both those guys healthy, to play that two-quarterback system and really make it work, as talented as Richardson is.
Was it an anomaly that they were able to shut down Alabama's rushing attack and outrush them big time in that game? Or is that, you know, is that something that they're going to be hanging their hat on this season, depending on successful attack with the run and against the run?
Well, it's something that caught my eye when I was looking over the Alabama stuff going into the game, that Alabama had not been able to run it already. And I was like, that's kind of weird. That's what they always still are able to run it, even when they can throw the ball. And, of course, Najee Harris was great last year. But, you know, I mean, the bottom line is Florida was able to take that away from them, and I think that's why a lot of were surprised. But I guess I wasn't surprised because they had a hard time running the ball. I think they were at 150 yards, but for Florida to hold them to 91, I think it was, that was a little surprising. I will say this, though. Alabama came out, and their plan was to throw a lot of short passes. So the running game wasn't essential to their success, and they didn't have to have it. But I know they didn't like that the game came down to the very end like that.
Talking to Pat Dooley about this Florida-Tennessee matchup coming up on Saturday in the Swamp, and looking at it from the other perspective, what's kind of been your view of this new look Vols with Josh Heupel taking over a few games in? A lot was made about the offense that he was going to bring there, but you know, how are the Vols viewed in your area as they get ready to come into the Swamp?
Well, I think, you know, we all, everybody who knows what's going on in the SEC knows that this is the trap game that they love to put there for some teams, you know. This is not, you know, it's not an ideal game. But at the same time, I would rather be playing a team that's been struggling for the last few years than a team that, you know, had a better chance of beating it. Anyway, that would be my thing. I don't know if it's a trap game or not. We like to use those phrases and talk about it. But, you know, there's no question. Florida, I'm sure this is what Dan Mullen has preached to them, you know, ad nauseum. I mean, hey guys, this is a league rival. You've got to win this game. All this stuff that if you feel good after the Alabama game, it can all go away on a Saturday night, you know. And so it'll be an interesting to see how they come out and how well they do play in this game.
Do you feel like that, you know, as I mentioned, Heupel's offense is what everybody talked about, but, you know, the defense has made some plays too. Has that kind of been a point of conversation that, okay, maybe Tennessee's defense isn't as bad as everybody thought?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that they felt like they've got some athletes there, and I watched pretty much all their three games, so – yeah, I mean, they clearly got guys who want to fly around, go get the football, and it's going to come down to more than anything, you know, Mullen, who's just showed this masterful job on Saturday against Alabama. Now he's got to do it against, a different kind of defense. So he'll do something totally different. He'll scheme it up different. And he's been saving everything pretty much for that Alabama game, and now it's all out there. So Tennessee will know everything he wants to do. It'll just be interesting to see how he runs the offense.
Pat Dooley is our guest, expert on the Florida Gators, been covering the sports down in Gainesville for a long time. You can watch, or I should say, listen to his podcast, Another Duly Noted Podcast. Podcast.com. I butchered that. Another Duly Noted Podcast.com. Pat, I grew up in Orlando, down the street, a couple hour drive from where you cover things. I'm just curious what your perception was of Josh Heupel when it was at UCF. I was kind of surprised when they hired Heupel. How many of some people I know down in Orlando were not as thrilled about what he did with UCF as I would have thought?
Well, the problem was he inherited a great team. We all knew that. And every year they got a little bit off. They weren't quite as good, and you kind of felt like there was this downward trend. And I think that's why a lot of people were excited about that. They were okay to have him leave, and then they end up getting Gus Malzahn. We'll see how that all works out. But I don't think anybody like shivered in their boots in the SEC when Heupel got hired. I think they just kind of went, at least it makes some sense. But it was kind of funny, nobody, I don't think too many people have really talked about this, to think that in both cases, the AD at Florida and Tennessee both went to that school and then brought their coaches, but they only brought their coaches because they couldn't find anybody else that was right for the job and they had, or that would take the job. Florida had that issue with Chip Kelly. And so they both end up with these coaches that from their old school, which it's amazing to see that happen of two schools in the SEC East.
How do you think you know the pulse of the fan base, and this is basically the case at any number of SEC schools where the bar is so high going in. But Dan Mullen, I know the rap has been, he's not making the big victories in the recruiting game yet, but do you think he's winning over the fan base, the confidence as they have this kind of momentum going forward? I mean, if there's such a thing as a good loss, that was it on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that I've ever experienced that in Florida, where the loss has never felt kind of quite like this, because now Florida fans are like, look, we can play with these guys. We've shown it twice. Nobody else has been able to play with them. So, let's go forward. We'll get them again. That kind of attitude, obviously – for Florida fans, they haven't been many losses, or there certainly weren't in the 90s many losses. So, where you don't, and then when you lost, you felt like crap.
Right. You're supposed to win every game.
Yeah, exactly. So this is kind of a unique experience, I think, for Gator fans. But like I said, it can be washed away this weekend, or it can be washed away next weekend up in Lexington, where I think a really good football team is waiting for Florida. So, they've got to keep this kind of going, and I think the fan base gained some new respect from Mullen, because Hevesy's gotten the criticism as offensive line coach, and he's stuck with them, and now they're among the nation's leaders in rushing game, and they love the plays and the scheme that Coach Mullen put together for that game. So I think it gave him new respect even within his own Gator Nation.
Pat, great stuff as we expected. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the game on Saturday in the Swamp.
Hey, anytime, guys. We'll see you.
All right. Pat Dooley, down in Gainesville. If there's a guy you want to talk Gators with, he is the guy. No question about it. Check out his podcast, as we were talking about before. When we come back, we'll continue to move forward in this final hour of the show. We've talked a lot of Titans-Colts today. We had a little sprinkling of Predators training camp. Talked to Dante Fabbro. We've got a lot coming. Darren, get it started.
I want to talk to you about Cool Springs MD. You've heard me talk about them for years because I've been going there for years, and they've been helping me for years become healthier and happier. And who doesn't want that? I know I do. And they have given me, they've helped improve my quality of life. And it gets tougher as we age. And there's a lot of things they do under one roof. And I think everybody has experienced this as an adult, right? You tacked on some pounds you don't want anymore, and you're ready to get rid of them for whatever reason. And weight loss management's important to them. And if that is the case for you right now, where you've got some unwanted pounds that you would like to shed, well, they got programs and products and people that can get you back on track and headed in the right direction ASAP. And they're proud of that. Rejuvenation, your appearance. Hope you think it's important like I do. And it gets tougher as we get older. Well, their experienced staff, which is what they have there, Cool Springs MD, can talk to you about PRP, hair removal, and Botox. Hormone therapy. Maybe you've been feeling off lately. You can't figure out why. You've got some, maybe you don't have any drive or the same energy that you're accustomed to or been experiencing some mood swings. You just feel off. Well, get your levels checked. Maybe they've dipped. Maybe they've dipped to an all-time low, which tends to happen. People don't realize as we age. And they can help you, and they can discuss with you about BHRT, testosterone, and estrogen. So they can help you in that. They do so much. It's a state-of-the-art facility there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. And if you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with these folks, pick up the phone and dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Hey, if you want to check out a good pregame show and get ready for the Titans and Colts, Rock Bottom Brewery in downtown this Sunday. Pregame show will be there 9:30 to 11:30 doing their show. Can go hang out there, have breakfast, have some drinks at Rock Bottom Brewery on Broadway prior to the game. And then you can head over to Nissan Stadium and see the Titans and the Colts, or just stay there and hang out and watch the game. Either way, it's a good option for you on Sunday morning. Our NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Also, something else to keep in mind. If you would like to win a pair of tickets to see Zach Brown Band at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, October 17th, you've still got time. And all you have to do is go to YouTube and subscribe to 102.5 The Game's YouTube page, and you'll be entered automatically for a chance to win tickets to Zach Brown Band at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, October 17th. A winner will be chosen on Monday, so Monday, September 27th. So keep that in mind. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we played what Derrick Henry had to say today after practice. Their offensive coordinator, after the Titans scored 33 points in their victory over Seattle, Todd Downing also spoke after practice today, and here's what he had to say.
No matter, it's to stick to the run and show that patience. How important is it for you to be able to do that? Was that easy to do so, just as far as, you know, maintaining momentum?
Yeah, we've talked before about, you know, just our identity and the culture around here, and again, alluding to some of the responses last week, you can do that when you're staying ahead of the chains. When you're earning first downs on first and second down, and when you're not behind the sticks, you can stay more patient and you can open up the playbook a little bit more. And so I felt good about the ability to do that. Certainly Derek was showing that he was a force to be reckoned with, and so we stuck with that, and it paid off.
You've been here for
week one to week two. What have you learned about yourself as a play caller and directing this offense in terms of making adjustments and all?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an ongoing process, a week-by-week thing, depending on who you're playing, you know, and I think that that's been, you know, a challenge each week is to identify what adjustments you have to anticipate and things that you may need to go to on the sideline. So I think for me, it's going to be a clean slate each week, trying to figure out the best way to put our guys in the best position to succeed.
You've been here for a couple of years, but now as the guy who's calling the plays, do you maybe realize more than ever what a luxury it is to have someone like Derek, who you just call any kind of run play and boom, it's 60 yards down the field?
Yeah, I mean, he's an absolutely phenomenal player, but I also have to tip my cap to the guys up front blocking for him. You know, they grinded through it as well. You know that we had some other pieces come in there and have to fill in for some spots, and we have that expectation here that no matter who's in there, we look a certain way on offense, and I thought those guys really exemplified that.
Even with that, how big a concern is pass protection, you know, 9 sacks and, you know, strip sack each of the first 2 games?
Yeah, you know, we definitely need to make sure that we're keeping Ryan upright. You know, and it's every position that has a responsibility to that. It's not just the offensive line, but the tight ends, the running backs, the receivers need to get open on time, and Ryan needs to deliver the ball on time. Certainly it's on me to put them in the best position to succeed in doing that and try to create good matchups in pass protection. And so, you know, we're a work in progress there and working hard to improve in that area.
What happened with Josh on the penalty, and how do you get him going?
You know, I think, we did a pretty good job overall of handling that loud environment, and that was just a byproduct of being a little bit off between the cadence, the timing of the snap, and Josh's motion. We got to continue to stay parallel to the line of scrimmage until we know the ball is snapped. Josh is working hard to find his role on this offense, and I think it speaks a little bit to how some of the other guys have stepped up and why maybe they're getting some reps. You know, Nick Westbrook being a guy that does a lot of dirty work, has earned a lot of playing time, Chester Rogers as well. And so we're going to be an ongoing process of figuring out what his role is going to be and where he can step up and contribute.
Look how Michael played on Sunday and when he kind of performed like that, kind of earned more opportunities.
Yeah, we expect consistency, whether it's in the run game or the pass game. You know, and certainly he had some production in the pass game. We've just got to get more consistent overall, and that leads to more opportunities for everybody.
Was the heavy involvement for Julio Jones, was that by design, or was that just kind of where the play was taking Tannehill? How would you explain that?
Yeah, I think it's similar to my response last week. You know, it's a byproduct of the game, getting more opportunities on first and second down to call some of those play-action shots and then also be able to make adjustments on the sideline to the looks that we're getting on first and second down. And so, as I mentioned, just because someone, doesn't get targeted on the play doesn't mean that they weren't first in the progression. And just because somebody gets the reception doesn't mean they were first in the progression. So it's a balance there. You know, I think that there are going to be defenses that try to take away certain players and there are going to be opportunities for others.
Deal with your new analytics guy during the week at all? Is that like any kind of a regular session now that you guys have one, or how does that work?
You know, we get some reports. We got a lot of information that's readily available to us, and sometimes how that can fit in the flow of the week changes. You know, you come back from a long West Coast trip or what have you, it can adjust some of those meeting schedules. But as we get into the season, get a rhythm going, we'll see where that fits.
It helpful? I know he's new, but found it helpful so far?
Yeah, I think part of my role is to gain, all information I can and then be the filter and the funnel to the game plan and to the players. So, I'll take any information I can get.
With Derek catching the six balls as well the other day, how valuable was that? And how hard has he worked to become a more consistent pass catcher?
Yeah, I think Derek made the most of his opportunities in the pass game, and, we have to aggressively take what the defense gives us. And if they're going to sink underneath and take away all the receivers, then we need to make some hay on checkdowns and on screens and things like that. So I was pleased to see him execute well and be ready when his number was called in the pass game, just like he is in the run game.
You mentioned that one of the long throws you had was sort of thanks to him as a pass protector. How do you see him improving in that area specifically?
Well, you guys saw Jamal Adams and how aggressive he was in the run game and fitting those gaps. And a lot of times in our play-action protections, it's going to take the back picking up someone who bit on the play fake. And Derek did just that, and multiple times. And very unselfish player. He's a guy that, tries to do for his teammates like they do for him as blockers. And so him being able to step up in there firm and pick up blitzers or adders in the run game, it's critical to our play pass.
Thinking and taking him off the field on a fourth and three in a game where he's catching well and protecting well.
Yeah, that scenario went from a third and extra long now to a fourth and potential go for it. And so we went with what we thought was a good call for us and a good personnel grouping for us in that third and fourth and medium situation. Didn't think it was close enough where we were going to be running the ball there, and so getting a protecting back in there or free release back in there we thought was best.
Two games is a small sample size, but are you seeing teams maybe coming out early, loading the box, focusing on trying to stop your run game?
Yeah, I think that will probably be a common theme for a while with Derrick Henry back there is, trying to stop the run, and there certainly has been a commitment to that. And as you kind of get into your game plan, you make some adjustments, maybe it's aiming points on a combination block, whatever the case may be, you start to see their adjustments as well, right? And so that's kind of the game you play within the game is they may not show loaded box, but on the snap it's a loaded box, or they're loaded up in there and they bail out. It's kind of ebb and flow to the game there, but I think we'll probably get commitment to stopping the run as long as we got 22 back there.
Did you see kind of a difference as the game wore on and you were hitting Julio with those shots? Did you see maybe a little less loaded box, the more you did that?
Yeah, I would say they certainly softened up. They may have aligned down there, but then once they recognized play pass, they got out of there, or maybe they were a little slower to trigger. But, I think that's something that, is a testament to our offensive line and our running backs, is that regardless of the look, we were able to stick with it and find some creases later in the game. And, that certainly is a big reason why we were able to win.
Speaking of your own line, wonder if you could talk about the improvement that Quisenberry has made, from just one season to the next.
Yeah, he's an incredible guy to be around every day, just a joy for the game. And so when you approach this business that way, you're going to find ways to improve. And he certainly puts it all out there for us. He's an emotional leader. He plays a great finish and great effort. I can't count the number of times he was there to help the running back up. And just by nature, when you keep approaching the game and you keep approaching obstacles and hardships and going through some of those tough times with that kind of resiliency, you're going to continue to improve. So Quiz is a great guy to have around here.
There you go. Titans offensive coordinator Todd Downing after their win over Seattle today after practice and getting ready for the Indianapolis Colts. It is interesting when you hear him talk about the impact of Julio Jones and soften up that Seattle defense. If they can get A.J. Brown, which we've been talking about all week, going into a typical A.J. Brown game, and you've got complimentary production from Julio Jones, it is. It's what everybody envisioned. It's what everybody's been talking about with this Titans offense. It's like, how do you begin to try to pick your poison if you're on defense, right? Like, okay, so now you've got to worry about A.J. Brown. You've got to worry about Julio Jones. You obviously have to worry about 22 in the backfield, and you have to worry about 17 under center. So, how do you begin? There's only so many defenders. There's 11 last time I checked. Like, how do you put the focus? Where do you put the focus on where you're trying to attack and slow down when it comes to going against this Titans offense when everything's hitting on all cylinders?
Yeah, and here's another thing, and this is something I wanted to work in here, and you just set it up perfectly for me. Another thing that defenses are maybe having to look out for, what is it, if you're trying to find a flaw in Derrick Henry's game, what has been the one thing that we've always talked about?
Slow starts.
Well, okay.
Pass protections, not staying in the game on third down.
Okay, well, you've come up with a couple, but I was going to say catching the ball.
His hands.
Is catching the ball. You look at last year, most of the time.
So those are two related things, I think.
Just
not being in the game on third down.
Those two reasons. He was targeted 31 times in 16 games last year. And the most he was targeted in one game was 5 targets against Houston. He had 2 catches for 52 yards. That was the most by a ton last year. This year, in 2 games, he's already been targeted 10 times. He had 55 yards last week against Seattle, 19 the week before against Arizona. He's being targeted more. It's been a point of emphasis for him to work on that, and it's clear that Todd Downing is using that more, or Tannehill is using him more, is more of a check down to go to him. And they're trusting him to catch the football more. That's another element right there, that if you can get Derek going and catching the football and on the field for third down, then that's just another weapon in the arsenal to go up against some of these defenses.
I agree, and you heard the related part of that is the pass protection. If he can stay in the game for more plays, then there's going to be more opportunities for him to catch the ball, especially on third down. So that's something to watch, because in the back of your mind, you still have to be wary of the workload. And if you can help it, you'd like to find ways to get him that breather here or there. But I do think that's something to keep watching for, is can they develop this to the next level with the screen game and just the check down routes. But it helps if you heard the example of the blitzing Jamal Adams and what that guy tries to do in the play action. He's coming one way or the other. He's either run blitzing if Henry gets the ball, or he's coming after the quarterback if it's play action, and you have to pick him up. And Todd Downing used that as an example of where Derrick Henry did a really good job. He's got that mentality of wanting to help. So that is going to rid maybe the critics of their last thing that they criticized Derrick Henry about. Lack of pass catching, lack of being in the game in third down.
All of last year, 19 catches, 114 yards. This year already, 9 catches, 74 yards.
Yeah, he's on a much better pace there. Another thing that's happening a lot, Darren, is you're hearing so much, if you're listening for it, out of Indianapolis. Their whole mentality is we've got to stop Derrick Henry. Of course, they're going to be asked about it, especially after he has a game like he did last week in Seattle. It's going to be the question of the week. There's some really interesting sound bites coming out of there of this. We have to do it. We're going to load the box. We got to do this. They haven't exactly stopped him. Last four games against the Colts for Derrick Henry. Last year in Indy, 27 for 178. The first game here, the Thursday night game, which was a really bad quarter that they had. They got behind. He still had 19 carries for 103.
Yep.
In a game where, you know, they were having to come back. The previous year, in 2019, 26 for 149 in Indy, 15 for 82 in Nashville. That was the early season game, the screw up game where the kicking game went downhill. That was when Mariota was still the quarterback.
There's Darren's, you know, road theory again. I mean, it's not a theory; it's a fact. Once again, he's better on the road.
Well, more carries and the way the game was going. And I would argue that early in the season 2 years ago, they hadn't found their thing yet. It was still the Mariota era, and they had all the flaws and issues. That was a bad loss that they had. They should have beaten Jacoby Brissett and the Colts in that game.
You know what they have done a good job with him, though, except for the game the game at Indy last year, they've kept him out of the end zone. He's only scored 6 touchdowns in his career against the Colts, and 3 of them came in that 45-26 win at Indy.
But whether he scores a touchdown or not,
he's still,
you know,
he's still
26 for 149 or 27 for 178, you know, I'll take my chances. Hopefully somebody else is scoring the touchdown if he doesn't. But I think this is – What a challenge this is for the Colts. You can just sense the urgency in everything that they're doing this week with the media. They know how important this game is. They're gonna lose the game, I think, before they let Derrick Henry run all over them.
Do we have the soundbite from Julian Blackman, their safety after practice, talking about Derrick Henry? Do we have that?
We could come back with that.
Yeah, I don't know if we have it yet.
Do you guys know who's had the most game-winning drives for a quarterback since 2019 in the league?
And we have it. But, no, I don't.
How do you prepare for that? You see me on film tackling him, too. So, I mean, all I got to say is we're going to tackle him. Like, yes, we know he's going to stiff arm. Yes, we know that. We're going to tackle him. We have to. It's a point of emphasis for us to tackle him. 2-2. He's going to get the ball. Get him down. You know? That's what we know, and we gotta execute today. It starts today, you know. Practice. It starts today. We gotta do that right now.
Can you anticipate a stiff arm at all?
Yes, I mean, yeah. With him, he's strong. So you really gotta like punch that thing down and do it another time, and then maybe try to get other guys like looking. Hey, come help me out. Come help me out. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm over here slapping his hand now. Somebody gotta come run. You know. So we just gotta make sure that we on our P's and Q's, like I said, and take care of it.
But that's your thing, though. Gang tackling.
Yes, sir. I think that we've been hustling the ball very well, but I also think that it starts at the very first play, man, making sure that they know that this is a 60-minute deal with us, man. This isn't just the first quarter, second quarter. This is all 60 minutes, and we're gonna have 7-plus to the ball every play. That's our goal. Gosh, I'm excited.
Is tackling Derrick Henry just about having that mentality again?
Just like you said, man, it's a mentality of a want to, you know, because if you as soon as you kind of like pause and you're like, oh, what do I know? You're on a highlight. You're on ESPN. That's what you're on. So you can't just, you know, second guess. You got to go in there and want to tackle. It's a want to thing. So.
Well, sounds like they're going to take the Arizona approach and they're going to do everything in their power to try to stop the run. And I would say good luck with that because of what we just said. Then the Titans have to be willing to, you know, then let everything. This is where Ryan Tannehill has got to. He's got to shake off the detractors. If that's the case and Indianapolis is effective and they are stopping the run, then Ryan Tannehill's got to open things up. He's got to loosen them up, and he's got to make them pay through the air, and he's got to do that.
And it might be on the early downs that you really have to
yes,
do that because
that's right.
The biggest weakness of the Titans offense by the numbers and by everybody who watches them is if you can get them into the obvious pass situations, they haven't protected Ryan Tannehill very well, and they have not been nearly as effective. When they're staying on time and they can get that play action game going, we know how unstoppable they can be. So that's the goal of the Colts is can you get to Henry on the early downs
right.
and force him into 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. That's when you have a chance against them. Let's be honest, you don't have a chance against them. If you can't stop them early in the downs, if they're keeping it on time and it's 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3 where they can still run or it's a reasonable thing, they're going to eat you up.
Yep. The answer was Ryan Tannehill. Most winning drives of any quarterback in the league since 2019. With 10, Derek Carr has 9. Josh Allen, Russell Wilson tied with 8. Kyler Murray with 7. That's the top quarterbacks in the league. Game-winning drive since 2019.
Pretty
impressive. Ryan Tannehill leading all QBs in the National Football League. Willie, why don't you tell everybody about Loan Pronto?
I would be glad to. Loan Pronto, once again, the message. Interest rates low. Mortgage rates in the 2s. That's where they can get you. If your mortgage rate is in the 3s or higher, maybe you haven't done this in a long time. The refi, you have to take advantage of these great mortgage rates that are out there. Loan Pronto can do that. And let me emphasize today what I've said a lot before. The refinancing process used to be a lot longer and more tedious. It's not anymore, thanks to Loan Pronto. They can get this done many times in around 14 days. That's what most loans take right now. It's an all-digital process now. There's a lot less paperwork. That's really refreshing. And take it from me, somebody who's done this before, and I have seen the paperwork thing back in the day. Loan Pronto has got the zero-cost refi. They're going to get that mortgage payment down for you. You're going to save money every month, and they're going to pay your closing costs. There's no junk fees or anything like that. And you're even going to skip your next couple of house payments once you're done with this process. That's a bonus for you as well. So what are you waiting for? 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or go to loanpronto.com and tell them you want to know about the zero-cost refi. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero-cost option.
We had a good time yesterday at First Horizon Park. Don't forget the Sounds are in their final homestand of the season. They're hosting Columbus. Sounds Baseball, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Tonight, listen on 94.9. It's Fan Appreciation Week. $5 and $6 beers all week. You can get tickets today. Visit NashvilleSounds.com. First pitch tonight at 7:05. Here's a stat that I hope Chris Sanders isn't listening because he's going to get excited about his pick and silly underdogs because he took the Texans +8. Listen to this, guys. This is a pretty incredible stat put out by Caesars Sportsbook and CBS Sports. Quarterbacks making their NFL debut on Thursday Night Football in the last 10 seasons, which is the case for Davis Mills tonight for the Houston Texans. The last quarterback to do it, last year, Brett Rippon. Raise your hand if you remember Brett Rippon starting a game for the Broncos. My hand is not up.
Mine is not up.
It's not. Yeah, Brett Rippon did it last year. The Broncos actually covered, but they lost the game. 2019, raise your hand if you remember David Blau starting for the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, of course. No.
No. The Lions covered. My guess is the lines are just absurd with a guy making his NFL debut.
Yeah, I think you got some leeway.
But listen to this. The Lions won the game. They won. 2018. I actually remember this one. The 49ers trotted out Nick Mullins. The 49ers covered the spread, and they won the game. 2017, Deshaun Watson made his NFL debut on Thursday Night Football, and the Texans covered the spread and won the game. 2016, Jacoby Brissett, Patriots, covered the spread, won the game, and finally, also in 2016, Trevor Siemian, yes, former Titan Trevor Siemian, made his NFL debut for the Broncos on Thursday Night Football, and the Broncos covered the spread and won the game. So, other than Brett Rippon last year, or Ripon, or Rippon, whatever his name was, I don't even remember that guy. That is the only guy in the last 10 seasons who has actually lost his NFL debut on Thursday Night Football. All of them have covered the spread. How about that for a stat? It's pretty impressive.
Quite
the coincidence.
Quite the coincidence.
I still would not take Houston tonight.
I know. With that being said, I still couldn't take them. Like David Mills, really? Or Davis Mills?
There's no rational reason why all of those things happened because it was Thursday, but it's a crazy wacky stat.
Right.
But that shouldn't, like, this, it, my philosophy would be you're betting on magic if you think that's why, and that's why you should bet on them tonight.
You're betting on magic.
That's just my thought about tonight. What that means for tonight, it means nothing to me, but it's quite the coincidence
that they all covered the spread and all but one won the game outright.
Some of those examples you cited were, I mean, Deshaun Watson, that's a pretty interesting, that's not just any
right. I mean, that's the
rookie
guy that they had drafted.
Some of the other ones were like the no name that was thrust in there. And then there was like a Brissett who was in there for Tom Brady because Garoppolo was hurt, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And, you know, he's quarterback of the Patriots. So that, you know, that's a pretty good gig.
Now he's
first
the
start.
Starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins.
Yes, because Mr.
Correct.
Tua has been ruled out.
Yep. But David Blau, Brett Rippon.
I mean, I have no recollection of David Blau.
And that was last year in 20 and 2019. I don't even know those guys. David Blau.
Who?
Is he in the league?
I'm going to say
really
probably not.
I really don't know.
Well, he won the game for the Lions, of all people. That's
good,
just
good
a crazy stat. That's a good word, by the way, magic. Well, that's like you're betting on magic.
I mean, but a lot of people bet on magic back in the day, and it worked out well for them.
I think there's a lot of people that love trends like that and go with it. That's just
No question. Well, isn't that analytics?
No, that's got nothing to do with analytics.
Well, I mean,
That's magic. Analytics have to do with the stats.
That's Irving.
Those are facts though. Those are not just opinions. That's a fact.
Yeah,
that
coincidental
those things
facts.
Happen.
Yeah, but
it's got nothing to do with the day of Thursday.
Go look at the teams as a whole. If you look at the Texans as a whole, they got more issues than quarterback. Watson could be their starting quarterback right now, and I still don't think they'd be very good.
You don't think the Lions had issues with David Blau in 2019 other than just Matthew Stafford not starting?
I'm sure they did.
The Broncos last year? How many games did the Broncos win last year?
I don't even remember.
Like
six?
Four? Five? Six?
Somewhere in there.
They weren't very good.
David Blau.
Well, you know, I am curious to see if Davis Mills has anything to bring to the table, because when the guy is a complete unknown, Kurt Warner was a complete unknown. Hey. There are guys that we have no idea. You laugh like Kurt Warner is starting for the Rams. And the next thing you know, Kurt Warner is a Hall of Famer.
What I'm saying, Willie, is you call it magic, but whenever they throw these Vegas sharps and they go, hey, just so you know, Houston's beaten Carolina 9 straight times in Charlotte or whatever. They've beaten Carolina 9 straight times. You would say, well, that's just magic. Houston stinks. Like, that doesn't factor in now. But they go, no, they've beat them 9 straight times for a reason, and they go with it. Like, there is something to it. Like, you may view it as magic, but there is something to it. You may view it as wild and wacky, but you got to admit, that's kind of a crazy thing to throw out there.
Yeah, and by the way, Shane from Ashland City says, thanks, guys. Now I'm dropping $500 on the Texans to cover tonight. When I'm divorced, I'm blaming y'all.
Blame Caesar Sportsbook. It's their stat. And CBS Sports. Oh, good stuff. All right, that's going to do it for our show today. We'll try to bring some magic to the show tomorrow as we wrap up the week. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.